name is John Bristow, and with me is Nicola.
Hey,
and
guys.
We'd like to thank you for coming out for today's session featuring XAML custom controls. So in this session, we're going to spend the next 60 minutes talking about what's possible in the context of UWP and what you can do in terms of building custom controls. I'm from a company called Progress, and we build a whole range of UI controls under the banner of Telerik. You may have heard of us. We have controls for UWP as well as a whole host of other .NET solutions for WinForms, WPF, et cetera. Yeah. Nicola, what do you do?
So I'm part of a team within Microsoft that looks after what's called the UWP Community Toolkit. How many have heard of the toolkit?
Right. Excellent.
Hopefully by the end of the day, most of you would have. It's a community project. So it's mostly done by the community and in partnership with Microsoft. So we work on that and we make sure that we have all the controls and all the tools you need to build cool UWP apps. Yeah. But today, we're going to talk about something else.
Yes.
We're going to talk about a danger that is to our society.
That's right. So as you know, the Earth itself is a pretty fragile place. We like to take care of it. And in the news, you'll hear a lot about things like climate change, et cetera. But something that may not be known to some of you, for those of you, oh, we're all geeks here, so we all like space and science and all that sort of stuff. A well-known threat, obviously, to human civilization, obviously, is the nearby objects that surround the Earth in orbit around our solar system. So oftentimes you'll hear about these when you know you talk about the dinosaurs or you talk about comets that are in the vicinity. Some of you who are older may remember Hale-Bopp and other things like that. And so one of the things that we wanted to do in the context of this discussion is talk a little bit about that. Now, in the context of what we're describing here for near-Earth objects, or NEOs, there's a variety of data sets that are out there. Agencies like NASA and the European Space Agency track and maintain data around these. So they maintain orbit data so that scientists can evaluate if these are a threat or if we need to, you know, watch them a little bit more closely. And more recently, these agencies have been spotting more and more objects in the vicinity as the resolution and telemetry improves looking at these objects. And so we felt like it would be a good idea to take some of the data that's available from agencies like these and apply it to a context in UWP and create an app and show you some interesting observations through it.
That's right. So, I mean, before we actually jump into a demo, we should probably show you the app so actually have a little context of what the app looks like. So we switch over real quickly to the computer. These are some of the websites that you can actually get this data from. This is the NASA website. It's all open APIs, as John already mentioned. And the ESA, the European Space Agency, has also this data. So you can get to this really, really quickly. And there's a bunch of APIs out there. And then the app that we're using is called the NEO Tracker. We're going to fill this up with a bunch of cool stuff in there throughout this talk so you guys actually kind of have some fun. And actually got to keep an eye on those little pesky NEOs. Make
That's
sure
right.
nobody hits us.
So again, NEO stands for Near Earth Object. So things like asteroids and things like that.
That's right. So moving the little, keeping the same context of space, we're going to talk about controls and what you can do with controls and what you can actually use for these controls. So most of you, if you've done UWP development, actually, how many of you have done UWP development? So
Excellent.
Most of you. So you've probably used the built-in controls like TextBox, ListView, all that cool stuff. So these are the ones that we're talking about. So these are already there. You can use them. They just exist. Now, one step beyond that is third-party controls. These are controls that our community has created, or they're open source, or there are packages out there that you can use. There's tools, all kinds of stuff that you can reuse that might be used for applications. You don't have to build them. They're already out there, and there's even more than you can even imagine.
Now, you know, dovetailing into that theme, obviously, is when you have these controls, either from base frameworks or third parties, you want, as a developer, to be able to restyle or retemplate these controls. Now, the beauty of using technologies like UWP and XAML is it gives you the power and flexibility to do just that. And in this demo, we'll be showing you how to do that and apply that. But it's a great sort of emphasis when looking at doing custom UWP development, especially around controls, is that ability to either restyle or retemplate.
That's right. And then the next step after that is, if you can restyle and retemplate, if you want to add more functionality to that, you can actually extend these controls and even make them even your controls by adding functionality that's not available, integrating with things like the dial, for example, and we'll show you a demo how to do that as well.
And then finally, if you're brave enough, and hopefully after this session you are, you can go ahead and build your own. And so our main motivation for this session is obviously to encourage you to get out there and build some controls, because there's obviously a lot of controls that can and will be built.
Exactly, but also to remind you that you don't have to build custom controls unless you really have to, because already other opportunities to reuse stuff that other people have already built.
All right, so let's start back at the beginning, the clearest orbit here, which is obviously third-party controls, either from ourselves like Telerik or obviously from third parties that are within Microsoft controls like the UWP Community Toolkit. But that being said, there's a huge ecosystem of
Yeah, so there's a huge ecosystem. These are just some a small number of libraries out there. All of these are open source. We can actually switch over. We can show you some of the Git pages for these. I'm going to use a really cool feature here as part of Edge that can actually show you some of these cool tabs that I have. I'm going to restore all of them. Check that out. I like that feature. So there's already all kinds of cool stuff. So, like, for example, the awesome UWP.
Yeah, so this is a curated list of a ton of resources that you as a UWP developer may want to leverage. So beyond just controls, it includes things like data libraries, effects libraries, et cetera. So this is part of that awesome list curation.
Yeah, this is really cool stuff here. We're not going to go through all of these, but it's good for you to actually be aware of these. And we can share a list to all of these later on after this talk, or you can just ping us on Twitter, and we can just point you to anything you need. If you need, I need a control for this, Nicola, how can I use this? Well, here's a library that can do that for you. And there's all kinds of cool stuff. And you also don't forget about some of the samples and some of the new stuff released around here. So, for example, released the Windows Template Studio all the way here, so you can use that immediately to get started with your UWP development, or you can use some of the samples that are released as part of the feature teams.
Yeah, this repo in particular I like because it's pretty much got every demo under that you could possibly ever think of.
Yeah. Now, while we're showing this, let's actually show you some demos for our own toolkit. So I'm going to start with the UWP Community Toolkit. I want to show you a demo what you can do with the UWP Community Toolkit, and I'm going to use the app that I showed you before, the Neo Tracker, to do that. Now, first thing I'm going to show you is if you've never used the UWP Community Toolkit, you want to know how to get started. And to do this, we actually have an application into the Windows Store. You can download, you can play around with every other controls to see what they do. And you can actually do kind of cool stuff. Like, for example, you can select, let's say, a drop shadow panel. And you can grab the XAML directly from there and just copy it into your applications. So I'm going to do exactly that. I'm going to open up the solution for our Neo Tracker control. It's an application.
Yep.
I'm going to start pasting stuff in here. So I already know what it is. I've spent the time building it out. But already I'm going to just copy and paste stuff from here. So Master Details View, really cool control. It's actually built by the community. Sean, I think, is already here in the audience, has built this. And you can do cool stuff. You can actually select items and just show up on the side. It's very simple control. And I can grab the code directly from there. Just copy and paste. I'm what's called a copy-paste developer. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of us. We kind of exist out there. I'm going to pull in the namespace here. You can see this is the UWP Control Toolkit namespace. Let's go ahead and pull that in. And I'm going to just change a couple things here. For example, I don't care about the foreground, so I'm just going to remove that. And there's a couple templates here. There's the item template, which is what shows up on the master view. And there's the details template, what shows up in the details view. And there's a template for no selection content. I'm going to remove that because I don't need it for this context at all. I'm going to bind to some data. So I have a collection view source here. Now, as I mentioned, I'm a copy-paste developer. So I'm going to copy-paste again. There it goes. So I'm going to bind it basically to the collection view source. I'm going to change this data template. I got to change the data type. So I'm going to use I'm going to pull in a namespace for that data type. It's part of a library that we're using called WebRocks.
Yep.
So I'm just going to name it Rocks.
And it's basically a service veneer over the API layer that you saw from NASA. We're just using that to call into that API.
Exactly. And then the object here is just called Near Earth Object. I'm going to apply the same data type to both of those. And then just for the master view, I'm going to go ahead and remove a couple items here. I'm just going to bind to the name of that object. And we're done with that data template. The detail template, it's a bit more involved, but I already know what I want to put in there. I want to put a different control called the expander. It's a very simple control. You can just put a bunch of these there and just put a bunch of data there, and that kind of hides through it. So I'm going to copy this real quick. Really easy to use. Copy, paste, for the save. There we go. Put a bit of scroll view so I can put a bunch of these so I can scroll. Put a little stack panel. There it is. And I didn't copy it right, so I'm going to grab it, run more time. You know, even in copy and pasting, you can make mistakes. There we go. I made a mistake again. Man, copy pasting is difficult. Have you guys run into this issue before? There we go. That's going to work now. So I'm going to remove all the content from here. I want to change a header. So actually, this says something that I want to show, so details. You know how to spell. I don't care about any of these properties. I'm going to remove those really quick. And then I'm going to make a few more of these, so that way I can actually have several of these. And then let's go ahead and fill this one up. I'm going to put a different control in here, one more control. We have a lot of these controls. You can choose whatever you want. But one that makes sense for me here is the header text block. Sent you a text block that has a header on it. It's a very simple control, but you have no idea how many times I've actually had to use this. Just makes things so much easier. I'm going to put a bunch of these in a stack panel. There it is. I'm going to bind this to name. I'm going to put one more, and I'm going to use a property on the near Earth object that we all care about. Is potentially hazardous.
Yes. Believe it or not, this is a Boolean that you get back from the API. So it tells you whether or not it's going to destroy us and leave a flaming dust ball of the planet afterwards. So.
That's right. Call it danger zone. There we go. This next one, next expander, I'm going to show some share details. So I'm going to put a bunch of buttons in here to actually share some data. Now, Toolkit is not just about controls. You can actually put, we have a bunch of services in there. So if you go back to the services tab here, you can see all the services that we offer. The whole idea is you have a couple lines of code just so you can pull in some services. So for example, we can use Facebook service to just log in directly and be able to share directly to Facebook. So let's go ahead and copy paste that code here. Make that asynchronous there. And just sprinkle in some code once in a while. I'm going to put in a key that I've already have here.
Yeah, this is very much the Julia Childs, here's one I created earlier type scenario. So.
And pulling the namespace, this lives in the toolkit services NuGet package. So I'm going to pull that in real quick. And then finally, I just need to actually share this. So we have a whole call here they can do, share to within Facebook dialog. I want to do that. Now I need to know what to share. I'm going to grab in the data context of the item that was clicked. And then I'm just going to share a little message for all my friends that essentially says, the world is about to end.
Yep. You got to make sure you get the hashtags right.
We'll do the same thing for Twitter, but we're out of time, so I'm not going to do that one. But you can do the exact same thing right there for Twitter. Last thing for UI, I'm just going to add a quick list here. I want to pull in some data from Bing. I'm going to put some news items for this so I can actually show you what's out there in the news for it. So if we go back here, I have a little list view I'm going to grab. And I'm going to bind this to the name of the near object. I'm going to convert it into actually a list of objects, and I have a function that I need to create for that. And this is a cool new feature. I think it came out in anniversary update. You actually bind to actual functions inside of your code behind. And here we just need to use the Bing service. Have you used that function before?
Yes, I will occasionally use the Bing service. So, or you're talking about the API.
I'm talking about the API,
right.
Yes. So I'm going to pull in the Bing service there. I'm going to search for the query. Let's go ahead and pull in the namespaces. It's easy as that. And then we can do two things. We can return a list, or we can return an incrementally loading collection. That way, as the list scrolls, we can keep loading and unloading and loading. One last thing I want to do here is animations. There's one thing that's my favorite thing for the toolkit is the animations part of it. So actually, I'm going to put a little element here that I want it to basically change the color depending on what item I have selected. So I have just a rectangle. It's about 8 pixels tall. And I'm going to change the color through code and apply some animations to it. So I'm going to move this down by 1. And the near-Earth objects are coming.
Yes. I'm not sure what that was. But for those of you watching this online, there was a noise there. We thought the asteroids were already here. So.
I'm going to subscribe to the selection change in the master detail set. When you change, we can apply some animation. And then here in the code behind, I'm going to just copy-paste my last thing, which is the animation. Now, the fun thing about this is I'm going to pull in one more namespace. Before I do that, let's make this asynchronous. There we go. One more namespace. That's the animation namespace for the toolkit that essentially allows you to do animations on elements. So for example, check this line. This one line of code allows you to fade it in at the same scale it. Then you can fade it out, fade it in, fade it out, fade it in, all done with one line of code. That's it. That's all it does.
It's a monstrous line of code. That's it.
It's one line of code, though. You can have all your source code in one line.
I'm sure you could.
Millions of characters, one line. Anyway, so let's go ahead and build it and see what that empty page looks like now. And I think that was less under 7 minutes or something like that.
Lots of copy and paste, but that's okay. But copy and paste, edit for taste, basically.
There it is. So here's the application. You can see here we have the master detail. We have the expander control. This is the Bing data that we pulled in. I can share items directly from here. It opens up. I haven't logged in, but I can log in. I can do some cool stuff there. Mm-hmm. And then if you can see here, the animations on the top. Let's find one that's dangerous, like that one. Check that out. It just applies animations directly.
Yep.
So you can do really cool stuff with this.
Yeah. So another example of a toolkit or a set of controls that you can use is one that recently came out from us called UI for UWP. It's available up now on open source, so you can check that out. And like with the UWP control toolkit, we also have a sort of kitchen sink app that you can check out. We've got a whole range of controls that you can go ahead and use. So everything from charts to list views to slider controls, etc. And I just wanted to highlight a few of them here. We're going to take a look at the chart in our demo in just a second, but some of the ones that people may have already been exposed to are ones like the grid itself. So the grid you may have seen during the keynote that you saw yesterday. This is a very powerful for control. This is sort of the kitchen sink control for most developers. You know, if you're facing a UI challenge where you can't get everything on screen, just chuck it into a grid and you'll be all right. So this supports all variety of features like sorting, filtering, paging, etc. And you have a wide variety of operations that you can conduct against it. A very powerful control we have is the data form. What this control does is allow you to auto-generate a form for input based on a class definition. So what we'll do is through annotations on a class, you'll basically control the way the engine runs, and you can control things like validation, whether fields are necessary or not. You can also generate the appropriate UI based on that definition. So all that we've generated here is the left-hand side. The stuff that you see in the middle for data input, that's all controlled through a class description that you'll annotate with attributes, and then the UI itself will magically generate. So a data form is a really rich and powerful way for quickly creating these data forms so that people can enter data. And there are a variety of other controls as well. One of the most powerful controls we have in this is, of course, the chart. But that's one that we'll be adding as an example inside of our Neo Tracker app, and we'll show that a little bit later. But this, as well as the UI UWP Community Toolkit, are available for you to use today. Both are open source, mm-hmm. so you can go ahead and jump in and take a look at that as well. And
or
so
start it's really contributing as well.
What's that?
Start contributing as
That's
well.
Right. That's
maybe
right.
Maybe grab some of the issues and start fixing them.
Yep.
I'm sure we'll appreciate it.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. You don't want to demo the controls in your application?
Yeah, we can do that as well.
I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to drive and you can just
Sure. I could drive. I like driving.
All right.
It's fun. Which one do you want to show first?
We can show, I guess, a grid or...
Let's go ahead and run the application real quick. Let's show what it looks like.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh.
We should have some elevator music. No, I think it's showing.
Yep, you're right. Okay.
There it is.
So in this example, we've got obviously all these Neos that have been showing up here. In this example here, what we've done is we've bound to a grid that has a variety of operations built against it. You'll notice that we're using a selector here against one of the columns, which is the name. And we're also grouping by its Boolean value whether it's dangerous or not. So if it's in green, it means it's safe. If it's red, it's not. That determination is made, obviously, through a variety of characteristics, but allows you to control that. If you go ahead and expand the filter icon next to the name property itself, right there, yeah,
right there.
You can see that this is actually bound to the type of the column itself. So we have a variety of types that we support, including string, numeric, Boolean, et cetera, as well as date, time, and others. We also have a templated one, so you can actually write that stuff yourself. And in addition to the operations you can do here, you can do sorting, filtering, et cetera. We can also group, which is the control that you see on the left-hand side there. If you go ahead and expand that out, you'll notice that we already have a grouping characteristic on here, which is the is potentially hazardous asteroid. You can control those as a user. You can also programmatically control those through APIs as well. So lots of great stuff. And obviously, you can customize these as you go further and further. Another control we have, of course, is our charting control. So this is an example of a polar chart. This is mapping out some of the NEOs that are in the vicinity of Earth based on their distance. Now, don't worry, they're not that close. You'll notice that the x-axis here is actually in a very high level of scale. You can control tooltips. You can certainly do a whole range of things like annotations as well, which you can also specify. And you can also have a rich degree of interactivity and animations associated with this as well.
Next one.
Yeah, so this is another example of the chart control, but also linked with the grid itself. So down below, as we click on various items in the grid, you'll notice that they light up in red here. And so you can have this sort of detail, master detail view of linked controls. And this control itself is also zoomable. So I think if we're able to move the mouse here, you can do zooming, panning, all kinds of things with that. And the axis itself will adjust automatically. And then finally, of course, there is this, in scientific circles, there's a variety of scales and things like that that are integrated as part of this. This is known as a Torino scale. So the stuff that's in green is potentially going to hit, but it's not too big or it's not moving fast enough to make us worry too much. Anything that moves more towards the red is danger zone. So, you know, the ones that hit the Earth way back when to kill the dinosaurs was probably in the top right. And so what we've done here is we've added this in the form of annotations. Annotations are things that you can supplement the graph with additional drawings. What we provide is an XY axis that you can, coordinate point that you can start drawing to, and you can start specifying paths and in XAML and start basically drawing anything that you wish. And the thing about this is if you go ahead and resize the app itself, it's actually fixed and able to redraw to those specific data points. So we provide context-aware data points for the data that you provide for mapping to in the chart itself. So it turns out to be pretty nice for that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Now that you know some of the controls that exist out there, some of the tools that exist out there, what you can do next is you find something you like, but it actually doesn't exactly look the way you like it, but maybe you can do something. You might think, I'm just going to implement myself. Or you can restyle and retemplate it. You can actually make it look like yours and make it feel like yours. So I have a quick example here. I just want to walk you through it. So for example, here's a couple text boxes. Just very simple, it's a simple UI you can create. But I want to actually change the way they act. Right now you have the header, it's on the top of the text box. I want to move it a bit to the left, and maybe I want to hide it when the item is not focused, so that way it actually has some animations to it as well. So what we can do is you can actually right-click on it, and you can edit the template that comes with all these built-in controls. You can actually change it the way they look and like the way they feel. And what this gives you is gives you a big file of what the template looks like. And it's comparative. It has a bunch of stuff in it. Some of the stuff that's in there is some of the default styles. You can modify this and apply it across all your different text boxes or whatever control you're editing. It also has the visual states. I've collapsed it in this case. But visual states for when the item is focused, when it's not focused, when the cursor is on top of it, when it's not on top of it, stuff like that you can edit. And then there's the tree of the control that you can actually edit yourself, and you can add more stuff to it or remove stuff from it. Be careful, though, when you remove stuff from it, the control might not work, actually. So you got to be careful when you just try things out. So if you want to change this, so for example, I can just move the header over to the right and get a quick grid. And then I can just move everything over to the left. And then I can add a visual state on the focused visual state. So I can add animation so that way when the item is focused, I move it outside so it can actually show the header. And just with a simple change, you can actually change the way the control acts without building a whole new control. And the control still has the exact same things that the developer built into it, like the button still shows up on the right to clear it, and all the automation properties still work, and everything just still works.
Yeah, I think that's important to mention, that you're not really drastically changing the operation of the control at a fundamental level. You're just overriding some of its characteristics.
That's right. And you can do the same thing with third-party controls as well.
That's right.
So we thought we marry the two.
That's right. So in our previous demo, we showed you one where we were using a list view in the case of the Neos themselves. And certainly, if we wanted to, we could go ahead and override that. Now, in that case, we're utilizing that XAML definition from the UWP control toolkit.
That's right. So, for example, if you go to the documentation for UWP Community Toolkit, you can actually get the templates for each one of the controls that we have. So if we pull in the master detail view documentation, you can get a link to the actual template that has been used to draw this control by default. So you can copy and paste this inside your application as one of your resources and then modify it, and it will apply to all your controls, this type of controls in there. So we've already done that here. We've already copied it, so I'll go ahead and open up the XAML. So it's right here. So we want to change the list view. So I want to put a grid view in there, or yeah, a data grid in there. So how do I do that?
All right. So the way we'll do this is we'll go into the, just like you guys did with, or rather what you did with the community toolkit, we can do the same with our UI for UWP toolkit as well. We can bring that up. But the easiest way to do that is just to simply create a new instance of a RAD data grid. So the RAD data grid is the control that we use for basically binding to any collection type that you have. So we have an item source property that you can go and expose. And this will do a whole bunch of things like binding directly to columns, et cetera, et cetera.
So I can copy just the item source from the list view and the selected item, and that will just work.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome.
And so all the heavy lifting that's done by the control, such as sorting, filtering, paging, et cetera, should be consistent.
And it should move these guys too.
Yep. And so in this example, we're simply just replacing that definition within app.xaml from the list view into the grid.
So we just replaced the whole list view, decided to show the master view, how everything looks, with a whole new controller, like data grid. And then we just changed the way that the control acts and looks.
That's why templates are so powerful, because you have this ability to mix, match, or even change after the fact.
So there it is. That's the master. So I can still select items. I can still do the same things I did with the list view on the side, but now it has a data grid.
Now, what's really cool, that one of the nice features I've seen in Visual Studio that's really awesome, is the ability to do edit and continue of XAML as it's running.
That's right. So I can open up the page here, the master detail page, and I can modify the master detail, master, what is it called? Master pane width, let's say 700, automatically updates in my view. I
have Very nice feature. Yeah. So be wary of the fact that you shouldn't be touching templates. Visual Studio will warn you if you go ahead and do that in the case of a bound data template. But in general, at the root level with XAML, you can actually make modifications and see those live as the app is running.
That's right. Cool. Now that you've done this, you actually restyled the controls, maybe you want to add more functionality to controls, something you can't do to template. So next step beyond this is to extend controls.
That's right.
Let's show this cool animation that we have here. There it goes. I spent a lot of time on that, man. So extended controls. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so extended controls turns out to be immensely powerful, right? Oftentimes you'll get a control, one that we provide or others provide, and it won't have all the functionality that you may need as a developer built out of the box. There's a number of ways in which you can extend controls. And the reason why this is immensely powerful is because sometimes even teams will come back and say, you know what, we're not going to go ahead and implement that feature for a variety of reasons. And there are a number of case scenarios where it could be specific to your application scenario that don't make sense to put at a control level. So extending controls via things like attached properties, et cetera, really gives you the power and flexibility for adding those capabilities to controls that are built out of the box.
That's right. So we have a couple demos here. Well, one demo.
Yep. Right. And this one's utilizing the dial that we have here up on stage here. And we're going to utilize this via attached properties to go ahead and control one of the charts that we have available, a gauge that we have available in UI for UWP.
So I can get a gauge directly from the toolkit, the UI from UWP.
So these gauges are animated in our scenario, but you can go ahead and control that through the dial as well. So in our sort of kitchen sink app, we're going to go ahead into the XAML here. And we're just going to grab that XAML here that refers to the radial gauge. The radial gauge itself can do a whole host of data binding, et cetera. And you'll notice that it's broken up into a variety of indicators and segments. These are basically to give you a visual indice of where the value is. You can put a whole variety of axes as well. And we're going to go ahead and change this a little bit just to make sure that we can bind to data coming in from the dial itself.
That's right. So we're going to have a little helper here. It's called dial helper. And what it does actually registers an attached property of called step value.
Yes. So as we're changing the value of the dial, we're going to go ahead and utilize that within the context of via an attached property for the one of the indicators here, which is going to be this thick bar that you'll see go from left to right.
That's right. So we're just adding this attached property to a control that we just copied over, and now we're just giving it support for a dial. So as soon as this loads, we will to actually move it.
Now the dial helper itself. You can move it. The dial helper itself comes from the UWP community toolkit, but you can go ahead and mix and match these very easily.
Yeah, works.
So if you're looking to create a virtual theremin, this would be a good way to do it. Of course, you'd have to interface with a MIDI library or something like that, but with controls like the ones we provide or others, you can go ahead and attach directly to them and change the overall usage model in those cases to support things like dialing and things like that.
Exactly. So this is a good way if you don't have the source code for the control, but you still want to add functionality to it, you can do it as a way to do attached properties.
Yep.
If you do have the source code of it and you actually want to extend it and add more UI to it and override the template and add more stuff functionality to it, you can actually extend controls, existing controls. So we've done that, for example, in the community toolkit by extending the existing list view to add pull to refresh functionality. So if you switch over to the web browser, I can show you what that would look like. So for example, let's go ahead to the UWP Community Toolkit. we have a control that, if you go to controls, I can actually navigate to it. It's called the pull to refresh list view. And you can see here, I can look at the code, and all we do is we're extending an existing list view. So when we're creating this control, we're taking the functionality the list view already has, the existing functionality. We're not going to reinvent the whole control. We're just going to add more functionality to it by even extending that and also extending the template. So we have a whole new template. We've taken the template from the existing list view, and we've added more stuff to it. Like, for example, we've added the pull to refresh indicator content inside of it, so that way we can access it through our code, and we can add some more functionality to it as well.
Right.
That's right. Now, you've gone through all this work, and you found out that, well, all the stuff that exists out there, it's not useful to me. I want to create a whole new control myself.
You think developers like to build their own controls?
I think everybody wants to start from scratch.
That is true, yes.
So to do that, we can actually need to start building controls. So that's where we get to the meat of the talk, actually how to build new controls. So we're going to show you with a demo. Hopefully those Neos are not going to kill us before then. To actually how to do that really quick. So if we go switch to our demo machine, so we already saw the new application, but I want to show you a view that we're going to change to actually add our control. And this is this view. It's called the space view. Right now, it's just essentially just a list view. It just has an item of items of item collection of these Neos. And then you see the ones that are not dangerous are in white. The ones that are dangerous are in red. And here on the side, we're just simply binding to this selected item, and we're just showing the details for it. But what we want to do is actually want to create a whole new control that visualizes this better. Maybe put the Earth in the middle and see how far each one of these items are. The closest one should be the closest to the Earth. The farthest one should be the farthest. And depending on the size, we should do the same thing. So we want to create a control that does exactly that. We want to be able to change that. So go ahead and open that view. It's called the Space View page. There it is. We can take a look at the code. Here's the list view. Just the list view I show you. And this is the grid that shows all the items, essentially binding to the selected item of the list view right there. That's all it does. So we're going to change that completely. If you look at the code behind of this page, all we are doing here is essentially taking the Neos from our data source, calculating what the minimum and maximum data is, and then we're using this new object called Neo that we're going to use to set the minimum and maximum size. All it does is distance, diameter, label, and item. And then the distance is from 0 to 1, depending on how close or far we want it from the center, and diameter is the same way, how big and close we want it to be. So I'm going to create a whole new control. I'm going to close this. There it goes. So we're going to add new item. They're knocking. They're knocking on the door. Mm-hmm. Templated control. This is what we're going to use, and we're going to call it space view. So it's going to do two things. It's going to create a source file for us, and that extends control. And it's also going to create a new folder called teams. And inside that folder is going to be a file called, I forgot what it's called. As soon as Visual Studio starts working. Thank you, Mr. Hermit over there. There we go, Visual Studio now is working. So generic.xaml is there created for us. And you can see here we have the default template for our control that we can start actually adding code to. I'm going to do a couple things here. I'm going to change the namespace to make it look a little bit cleaner. Not sure why Visual Studio does this automatically, but I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. There it is. And then that's it. So we have our template, and we have our code behind already set to use the default style for that. So we're going to do a few things. First, we want to make sure that we can bind our item collection to this control. So we're going to add a couple dependency properties. And dependency properties allow you to do things like binding, animation, and stuff to different properties. So I'm going to create a region so I can collapse it later on. And region. Am I doing something wrong? Doesn't matter. So go ahead. So we're going to create a new property. So there's a cool snippet for it. PropDP allows you to create these dependency properties. Double tap. And you can call this. This could be an enumerable of type Neo. I'm going to call it item source, kind of the same name that the list already has, so that way we don't have to change any of our existing code. I'm going to register this onto our space view, and I'm going to set the default to be null. I'm going to add a few more properties here, but before I do that, I need to actually open up my snippets for that. So I'm going to, give me 1 second. There we go. Open up my snippets so I can copy and paste. I'm going to create these two different dependency properties. And we're going to use these dependency properties to set up the minimum and maximum size of our control. So that way, when we go into our control, we can do that. Now, let's go ahead and add something to our template. So here, by default, we have a border. we're going to change this to add a canvas inside, so we can actually draw these. I'm going to call it item canvas. And then we're going to add an element in the middle, an ellipse, that can actually draw the Earth. So it's going to be a blue ellipse, always horizontally or vertically centered. Now I need to change the border to a grid so I can put multiple items in there. And this guy doesn't have any border brush or border thickness. That's it. And now we can actually go back to our page, and we can start replacing the list view. And then we can just, we already have the namespace for controls right here. Actually, no, Neo controls, Neo tracker controls. So I can just say Neo controls space view already shows up. We can start using it. We don't have a template yet, so I'm going to comment that out. And then I can do things like add the max item size, like we already added. It's not good. Let's make that 20, actually, no, 60. And then as min item size, let's make it 20. So our items drawn around maybe from 20 to 60 pixels, depending on the size that we set as part of the Neos. And that's it. So we can actually go ahead and run this, and we can see what it looks like. But I don't have to run it. I can actually show it here into the designer. But before I do that, I have to actually build it. So let's go ahead and build it. And so this is really cool. I have the generic here that has all these items. So I can just put everything in here, and then it won't work. Sorry? Canvas. No, no, it's fine. It should be outside. It should be in there. Let's go ahead and take a look what the problem is here. Oh, thank you. See? That's what happens when you don't practice your demo good enough. I think you just become like me, so you don't have your demos right. It's okay. You don't have to be like me. You can be better. You should be better. No, I promise I won't make mistakes. Okay, deploy started. There it is. What is going on up there, man?
So this is you know, just basic drawing routines here. But also, we're going to make it look better.
That's right. We haven't drawn any of the items yet, so let's go ahead and do that. So right underneath, actually, I'm going to do it right above this time. I'm going to keep it tricky. I'm going to override a method. Let's go ahead. It's called onApplyTemplate. And this is what it's going to call when the template is actually available for the control to start using it. And that way, I can reference the canvas and start drawing to it. So I'm going to add a quick property here. I'm going to call it canvas. So that way, I can actually reference this throughout my code. And I already have the code for this. So I'm just going to copy this guy here. Essentially, I'm calling the getTemplateChild. That essentially, I'm passing the name of the control that's inside of my template. I'm trying to find this. If it doesn't exist, it basically just throws null reference exceptions. And this is important to note. If somebody overrides your template and remove the item, the canvas control, the control won't work. So you should actually be able to handle those things. And here I have two methods. I have a create neos and position neos that I got to create. And the reason why I have two methods, what happened? Generate method, there it is, generate it, generate those two. So the reason why I'm doing this is because when the size changes, I want to position them without actually recreating them. So that way I just split up the logic into two different functions. So let's go ahead and do the create first. Here, basically, I just grab the item source, iterate through each of the items, and create new ellipses and just position and just add them to the canvas children. And then I just call position immediately right after to position those elements where they need to go. And the logic for this is very simple. You just split up the angle between all the elements and it just lay them out depending on the distance and everything. This is not math class, so we're not actually going to go through that code. You don't have to do that. And that's it. Now, actually, when I build this, this should just work. There it is. Now, I already showed you there's an ellipse in the middle, but maybe I want to actually give a control to the developer to be able to put any control, any element they want inside of my control to be in the middle. I don't want it to be just a hard-coded ellipse and they have to override my template to be able to do that. So if I generate in here, I can actually add, instead of ellipse, I can add a content presenter, and that can actually present content that the user specified. So I'm going to remove all the different things. And then be able to do that, I'm actually going to do something interesting. I'm going to change this from content to content control instead of just a control that already has properties for content. And I can immediately bind this content for this content presenter to the content of my control. So that way, instead of, let's go back to the page here. close this guy out. Let's make this a bit bigger so we can actually see it. So instead of having this middle thing here, I can actually add some content inside of my control to be in the center. And I'm going to do that. There it is. And then let's go ahead and build this so it actually shows up into the designer. And you'll see the ellipse will actually replace with the image that I put actually inside my control. So that way it's much more extensible and people can actually edit and they can do some cool stuff. It's a little hard to see, so I'm actually going to add a little background here so you can actually see it immediately. There it is. It's black. Now, we can't see the Neos yet because it's an Atom control. But we can do some cool things to actually make it easier for developers when they're using your controls to be able to design this without actually having to run your application. So, and there's some APIs to actually detect when you're running in design mode, in designer. So I can actually grab this code and I can check to see if I'm running in design mode. And I can just populate the items myself just so I can just draw on the screen so I can take a look at them.
Yeah, it's an important part of, you know, obviously authoring controls is make sure that you're designer friendly. This will help, obviously, developers using your controls much more. And that includes things for anything that can be data bound. Obviously, you want to display things in the absence of data. We do this in the case of the chart and the grid, for example. So you want to make sure you target the designer as part of that.
That's right. So you see now they actually showed up in there. I didn't have to do anything. They just have someone design my application. I can design it so I can actually see all the items, what it will look like. And then when I run the application, here all the Neos actually join around it. You can see the sizes have changed depending on what the sizes are that we have already specified, and the distances around them. So you can see there's a big one that's really far away here. There's some tiny small ones really close by. I mean, relatively speaking.
Right. That is not the scale, by the way. They are not that close to the Earth. So these distances are huge, but yeah,
you get the idea. Now, one thing I want to do here is I don't want to hard code the elements, what they look like. I want to actually add a template for the user to specify which one of the items will look like. So I'm going to add a new, whole new dependency property for just the data template. It's just going to be a data template. I'm going to follow the naming convention of the list view. I just call it item template. And it's going to be part of space view, defined property. So I'm going to change it here. I'm going to, instead of creating an ellipse, I'm going to generate some code using the data template. Let's go ahead and do that. So all I'm doing is just I'm loading the content from the template to create this element. And then inside, I'm passing the data context of the item that the user has specified as part of this. So that way, I can actually do some binding inside of my data template. I can do some cool stuff there. And that's it. I'm just going to change that to control. And then when I go back to my page, I can actually uncomment this guy now. I can actually use this data template. And let's go ahead and change that to Neo controls, not Neo, but space view. There you go, item template. I don't want a text box to be around. That just doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to change this to an ellipse and change the text, remove the text, and just use the same code here that I have for changing the color. But I'm just going to change the color to the fill element, et cetera. I'm going to close this guy to get out of my way. That's it. So when I run this application now, you'll see that I put content in the middle to put in the center, and I put a template in there to specify what each one of the items will look like around it, and then we'll be able to extend it. Developers can actually do some cool stuff with it and maybe change it the way they want instead of having to overwrite my code or extend it, et cetera, et cetera. There it is. Different stuff. Now, next thing is we got to handle input. Now, this control might actually run on multiple devices.
Yep. So if you're, for example, on the Xbox, because obviously we're targeting UWP, or we're on a smaller device, for example, we want to make sure that we're context aware. And so that means if we're tabbing on items and bringing them up, we want to make sure that we can go ahead and support that, and also a variety of input values. You saw the dial already, mouse input, et cetera. Those things are going to be important.
That's right. So to do that, I'm going to add a selected item so that way I can actually specify what the selected item is. So I can change the view of what a selected item looks like compared to the other ones. And I have a little property here, an event that's not event, but a callback that's going to be called every time that the values change so that way I can do something with it. And what I'm going to do is every time I select that item is I'm going to use the animation library from the toolkit to make that full opacity. But I'm going to change the opacity of all the other items to 0.3 so that way you can actually show which one is the one that's not specified. I'll change some animation duration here to 200 milliseconds. That way we have some animation to make some fluid design. There it is. Now, we have a code to make a selected item. Let's go ahead and actually be able to select those items. So here, when I actually have my control, I'm going to add some events to it to be able to handle things like mouse input, keyboard input, controller input, check when the atom is focused, all these different events, be able to handle these. Now, with the magic of copy-paste, I can actually do that. There it goes. I'm going to handle all those input events. So I'm handling the lost focus, the got focus, the key up. And for example, on a key up, that's where I set the select atom. So when the user actually removes the keyboard control from the key up, I can actually select an item. Same thing with the pointer release. As soon as I leave the pointer of an item, actually that's going to set the selected item. And that's it. So, and because we're setting the select item, I'm using the same name as the list we did. We should see, as I'm selecting items, the element on the right should actually apply the properties so you can see all the name and everything for it. There it is, and I can actually select it. You can see we have the animations. I can select items. I can use the keyboard. I can focus through. But this is interesting. I can actually tab through it, but it's annoying. Like, tabbing through this is just a pain, and if I want to go back, if I'm using a controller and I have like 100 of these, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So that's why I had to get and change the way that the keyboard's going to act with this. I'm going to do two things. First thing is I'm going to change the tab navigation mode to 1. So that way I can only tab into the whole control once. But then I'm going to handle the key down event to be able to move the focus with the left and the right arrow keys. And then that's exactly what I'm doing here. When I get the left and arrow, right and left and right, we'll simply just move to the focus the next one. I can tab out if I need to. However, this is not going to work on the Xbox. On the Xbox, you don't have a tab control. You can't tab out. When you have, you can just left and right, you can't get out. You're going to get stuck inside of this. So we're going to use what's called engagement mode on the Xbox. So that way, when I'm using a controller, I want to be able to actually engage with the control. I'm going to want to click A to do that. I want to click B to do that. And then we already have a property that can do that automatically for you. If you set the IsFocus engagement enabled mode to true, this essentially do exactly that. To be able to interact with the control, you have to press A. To not interact with the control, you have to press B. So let's go ahead and take a look at that real quick. I have a controller here. No batteries, though, but I believe there's a cable. So. And here we go. So here you go. So right now, when I'm focusing with the controller, I focus the whole control, and I can actually move out. Press A. And I can actually move out with the control inside of it, and I can do some cool stuff. Press B, I can actually move out. So this makes a lot more sense when using a controller.
The next version of our app will destroy those things eventually with the Xbox.
Hopefully. But when I tab in with the keyboard, I can actually tab in once, and I can actually move the arrow keys to move between things. So it actually just makes more better across multiple input modalities and different devices if you're handling your application, which is really cool. Now, there's a few more things I want to do before we actually move on. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about a little bit about themes. So you might be actually wanting to put different colors into your control, and might be want to think put your like red color, green color, whatever it is. But in order to make it more usable for your developers to use this, you want to make sure that your control is theme aware. And there's a lot of resources out there that you can use that already are theme aware that make your control look beautiful without you having to worry about colors. So if you look up online for UWP theme resources, you can actually have a whole list of what these resources look like when it's dark theme or light theme. And your application and control can automatically change depending on what the system is or whatever the developer has decided the theme of the application should be.
If you are a control developer, you should also publish your themes as well. We do on our side for Telerik. We publish the color values and give them names as well for each brush.
So I added a couple of theme resources here, and I'm going to go back to the theme settings of my system. If I select the right control here, hopefully, when I change to light, you can see here the background magically changed because it's aware of the theme that the device. So it's much easier to use and extend and do kind of cool stuff there. And finally, and my favorite thing, and the easiest thing you can do for application is to handle accessibility. Your application needs to be accessible by anybody. And there's some small things you can do to make this a lot more easier, is like handling the narrator. And the only thing you have to do for that is actually just set a value for the automation properties. So if I go back to Space View when I'm creating each one of my items, there we go, create Neos. And I can just set the property real quick here. There it is. All I'm doing is setting the automation property, name property, to the label of that. So that way, when the narrator is reading this, it can actually read the actual value for that, what that property is, et cetera.
Yeah, I thought during the keynote that that narrator capability was fantastic. I think it will give us a lot better idea of what actually users are interpreting when using our app.
So hopefully the narrator will not work and we have sound. Nope, we don't have any sound.
Settings. There it is. Tap 3 times with 4 fingers to review the full set of touch gestures supported by narrator. Drag narrator's Neo Track menu items, option items,
so it's
Microsoft dot menu items, Neo Tracker 1864 deadless. 2017 HX4.
So actually reads the whole thing. So if I'm actually visually impaired, I can actually navigate through this. I can listen to it. Okay, that's the one I want. Done. It just worked. And so this is a small amount of code to actually enable that for your controls.
Yep.
So I think that's it. We have a full running control in
spaceview.cs read only.
Annoying narrator sometimes.
Narrator settings.
It has to be close. Exiting narrator. Yes. There we go. Moving on.
Yes.
So let's recap really quickly. We did a lot of stuff, and sorry for rushing through it, but you can watch the video later if you want to go to the details. But we actually have all the code published online. You can look to it. The whole point of this is to show you that there's a lot of things that you got to take in consideration when building this. So the first thing is some of the checklists you got to just keep an eye. You can just keep this next to your monitor. So just checklist when we're building these controls is make sure you check this if someone else already created one. Don't make it. I think it's everyone says this, but it's true. You can take one, you can extend it if you need to. You don't have to reinvent the wheel again. Make sure you use system styles and resources whenever possible. That will make it easier for developers to use your application and tailor it for their brand or whatever it is and apply teaming and all kinds of different things. And then consider all input modalities. You never know when the control is going to be used on an Xbox or on a desktop or on a Surface Hub, whatever input modality they might use. You might even want to handle the dial if that's what the control can support. That's going to be something cool to do.
Yeah, one thing just on something that we've been talking about here is we haven't really touched on design. That's a whole other topic. And we intentionally did that because we just wanted to focus on the more technical aspects of control implementation. Yeah. But certainly there's a whole range of issues that come into account when you're thinking of smaller screen real estate, things like that. So you also have to also make sure you take care of that in addition to all the other issues we've raised here.
That's right. And then for accessibility, if there's some small things you can do to make your applications more accessible and just something you have to consider. And testing is much easier. We announced the developer mode for the narrator that you can actually black out your whole screen. Use it. Make sure that your application, the control can be usable with that.
That's right. And definitely don't forget the designer. That's going to be critical. So in the designer, if the developer goes and binds to a data source, make sure you support that through the item source. Make sure you render that accordingly as well. It's going to make that usable, sort of that control much more usable going forward.
That's right. And then make it simple and reusable. Don't make it too specific to a specific function. Make it generic and make it easier for developers to do multiple things with it. I think it just goes without saying.
Yeah.
And make sure you play with others.
Yeah. So there's a variety of frameworks out there that you may want to utilize and mix and match. One example is obviously the two toolkits that obviously we support. So the UWP control community toolkit and the UI for UWP control suite, they should play together nicely. And so you should be able to do mix and match and have that that nice playing of others.
That's right. Now, one thing we didn't talk about is distributing your controls. Once you actually finish your controls and they're ready to be shared with others, share the love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get others to play with them and work with others to be able to do that. And one way to do that is through NuGet.
Yep. So Telerik UI for UWP is available up on NuGet today, along with UWP Community Toolkit. So you can go ahead and grab those and start playing with them. But that is obviously something that if you're publishing controls, you should definitely take advantage of. If you have any questions on how to do that, you can go ahead and check out the UI for Telerik UI for UWP. We've got actually a batch script that we run to generate the NuGet package. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple, but definitely part of that process is NuGet.
And that's a good point. That's how I make all my batch script. I just take somebody else that made a batch script for making NuGet, and I just use that into my thing. And it works. It just changed a few things, and that's it. Or if you don't want to deal with NuGets and generating NuGets, just contribute it to one of the open source libraries that are out there, you know, one of the ones that we're working on or one of the other ones out there that are available. And share the love and make sure that other people can look at your controls and add more stuff to it. You never know how many times I've added a control and other people have thought, like, oh, that would be great to add this and this, and many people jump in and just make their controls much better for everybody to use. And on that note, The control that we did today, I want to actually publish it to the toolkit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay. Let's go ahead and do that. So ahead of this, I created for the Ubiquiti toolkit, we have a process for publishing or for actually contributing controls to it, and that you have to make sure that people like to have this control. So I created a little issue onto our open source GitHub page to make sure that people can actually comment on this and they can take a look at it. And I also created a user voice. So there's a user voice sentry you can create to make sure that people can vote it up and down to make sure that, hey, this will be useful, this wouldn't be useful. So this is one way that we gauge the interest from European developers that want to use these controls. So we ought to do this. So when you do that, you want to make sure that you do this before you actually just publish it or just do a pull request to make sure that people actually like to have this control. And give you feedback before you actually do all the work in developing this control. But once you've done that, you can actually do that. So I forked the Ubiquiti Community Toolkit, and I've added the control in there. So I can directly do a new pull request right from there. And you can see here, here's the code for the control. I've made it a bit more generic. And by that is, I can show you, I've already integrated it with the sample app. This is a version that has the control in there. It's called SpaceView right now, but I'm sure the members of the toolkit will not like that name, and I'm going to make me change it.
We like the name.
And this is what it looks like right now. So you can actually, it's not just the scenario I showed you. This can be used for many different scenarios. And as we're developing this, like, well, I can use that for this. I can use that for that. And, you know, it's really cool. You can change things like add anchors, add orbits, change the color of these, make it green, use it for things like device graphs. If you show Andrew Klinik's talk yesterday, he used the exact same control to do this. You can add different, you know, items here. It works really great. So it's great for people to have this. So let's go ahead and actually do a pull request, if you guys don't mind.
Live okay? On stage. There you go.
Okay, what, everybody? I'm going to put your name down on this, so you better be okay. Adding space view control. And from love,
add build. There you go.
2017. There we go. Create pull request. Now, we create this pull request. A few things happen here. We run some tests automatically in the background. There's people get notified that there's a pull request, so they can actually start yelling at me for making all kinds of mistakes. They can start doing this. I think we have a couple people in the audience already that has already started reviewing the control, and I'm thinking in a few seconds we're going to see some comments in here of them maybe refusing it. Oh, there's Sean already adding, could this be accomplished by restarting the list view? Come on, every single, do you copy and paste this every time? Is that what you do? Cool, so we tag this and people can review it. You can go on live right now, you can actually review this, you can look at the code, you can do some cool stuff with it. So it's pretty fun.
So, recapping, we've got 2 minutes left.
Right on time.
Yep. So, obviously, you have a rich platform for you to utilize. Start from there. You have all the building blocks for you to get started building UWP apps. And from there, you can start expanding your universe into things like third-party controls. We sell, obviously, a variety of controls. We provide our open source controls, UI for UWP, which is available now. There's other ones, such as a community toolkit, that you can use. But if that doesn't solve your problem, certainly looking at retemplating or restyling controls can certainly help.
That's right. And then what does the future hold for everything? I didn't go to the extent controls, did I?
No, that's fine.
I should pay attention to what you were saying.
That's all right.
Anyway, as John was saying, make sure that you can actually extend existing controls and be able to, you know, reuse a lot of stuff that the people have done. And if that doesn't work, at the end, the last thing that's left is just build your own custom controls.
Yep.
And, you know, just distribute them, and share the love. Now, in terms of what does the future hold for Telerik?
Yeah, so we've recently added accessibility across our entire control lineup. So when you utilize the Navigator, for example, it will now work across our data grids, our charts, et cetera. We've also added the samples app that you saw there inside of our source code repository, so you can go ahead and use that as well. And if you have any ideas or suggestions for any of our existing controls or maybe ones that are new, you can either ping us on the issues list, so we're happy to take those in.
That's right. And then on the toolkit side, we have a new release coming up in end of June, which is 1.5. We're going to have some new controls in there. I mean, everything we do is in the open, so you can take a look at the new stuff. You can grab some of the pre-release packages. They're already building each time we have a new pull request that's already there, so you can actually start playing. You can start fixing some of the issues if you like, or you can start requesting new controls and just engage with the community and make sure that we have the best toolkit that we could have for anybody building UWP controls.
Yep.
That's it. So thanks, everybody, for joining us on this session. We have some stickers down here, so if you want to get some stickers.
I have some hats and stickers as well.
Well, so come on stage, say hi, and let us know what you're building and how we can help. Thanks.
Thanks.